Iran says it is opposed to a step-by-step revival of the 2015 nuclear deal, also known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA. UK medical regulators say 7 people have died from rare blood clots after receiving the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. And Germany reports more than 18,000 confirmed coronavirus cases and a further 120 new deaths. And welcome live from Tehran. You've tuned to World News. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Iran says it is opposed to a step-by-step revival of the 2015 nuclear deal, also known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA. Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh said that Tehran has repeatedly made its stance clear. He said the country's definitive policy is to have all U.S. sanctions lifted. Khatibzadeh said only after an effective and verified removal of U.S. sanctions, Tehran would reverse its commitment cut under the deal. The remarks came in response to recent comments by the deputy spokeswoman of the U.S. State Department, Jelena Porter, who said Washington was willing to negotiate the steps Iran needed to take to return to compliance under the JCPOA.
Iran and the other signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, held virtual talks on Friday to discuss the fate of the agreement. During the meeting attended by China, Russia, France, Germany, and Britain, along with Iran, the signatories agreed to hold in-person talks in Vienna on Tuesday. That will be part of the meetings of the Joint Commission of the Nuclear Deal. Later, White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki claimed there will be indirect talks with Iran in Vienna.
These talks will be structured around working groups that the EU is going to form with the remaining partners in the JCPOA, including Iran. And the primary issues that will be discussed are the nuclear steps that Iran would need to take in order to return to compliance with the JCPOA, and the sanctions relief steps the United States would need to take in order to return to compliance.
But an informed Iranian source says that Tehran will hold no direct or indirect talks with Washington before it removes all anti-Iranian sanctions.
According to the immutable guidelines set out by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, any outcome of the joint JCPOA commission meeting, which is based on the notion of step-by-step removal of sanctions, is unacceptable. According to the guidelines by the leader, the Islamic Republic will only return to its JCPOA commitments after the removal of all U.S. sanctions and Iran's verification of the move. The Islamic Republic will not hold any mediated or unmediated talks with the U.S. before all sanctions are lifted. Just as the U.S. left the 2015 nuclear deal without negotiations and imposed sanctions on Iran, it should now remove all sanctions without talks.
Iran signed into the 2015 nuclear deal and committed itself to limiting its civilian nuclear program in exchange for removal of all nuclear-related sanctions against the country. That was meant to ensure Iran benefits economically from the accord, but those benefits were scarce and fully evaporated after the former U.S. administration withdrew from the agreement in 2018 and imposed unilateral sanctions against Iran. Analysts say all Iran is saying is that a once-negotiated deal does not need to be renegotiated.
The deal was the result of negotiations. So the negotiations have already taken place. The deal tells all sides what they're supposed to do. So the Americans know exactly what they're supposed to do. There's nothing to negotiate. If they want the deal to work, they have to implement it. But if they want to take bits and pieces and think that they can gain concessions from Iran, Iran is not going to do that.
Almost 3 months into the Biden administration, Washington is yet to right Donald Trump's wrongs on the nuclear deal. Tehran is clearly seeing through Washington's empty rhetoric and is calling for action. On Friday, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi told a virtual meeting on the nuclear deal that the remedial measures Iran took after the U.S. withdrawal from the nuclear deal are reversible, but only after the removal of all anti-Iran sanctions and its verification by Tehran.
Earlier, political commentator Tohid Assadi joined us with his take on Tehran's opposition to a step-by-step approach toward the revival of the 2015 nuclear deal.
There is an idea that Biden administration is going through the same trajectory that Trump administration did, and it's trying to kind of persuade Iran for going for further negotiations with no tangible outcome for Tehran. And with that said, I don't think at the time being, under the current circumstances, Iran is going to be that much for this proposal. When it comes to Tehran, currently speaking, any kind of proposal related to JCPOA coming from the United States is just for the sake of wasting the time and nothing in practice in return. So in this context, I think Iran has got this sense that the United States, either under Trump administration or Biden administration, is not a country to be trusted in any kind of negotiation.
Well, the Iranian president has called on people to strictly abide by health protocols to tackle a new spike in coronavirus infections. Hassan Rouhani says a fourth wave of the disease has struck some provinces, which may grip several other areas if health protocols are not observed. He said shopping sprees in the run-up to the Persian New Year and trips during the holidays are mainly to blame for the possible nationwide surge in the pandemic. Iran has reported 123 more daily coronavirus fatalities, taking the overall tally to nearly 63,000. More than 11,000 new cases were also posted. That brings to nearly 2 million the total number of infections in the country. And now to Bahrain, where people there have staged rallies to demand an immediate and unconditional release of all political prisoners amid the coronavirus pandemic. The demonstrations took place in the capital, Manama, and 18 other towns and villages across the tiny Persian Gulf Kingdom. Protesters carried signs reading that political prisoners are facing the threat of COVID-19 in overcrowded cells. Right activists have also sounded the alarm that the respiratory disease is spreading among prisoners. According to the London-based Bahrain Institute for Rights and Democracy, dozens of COVID cases have been recorded among inmates in Bahrain. Bahrain's public prosecution office has announced that 126 prisoners will be free to serve their terms outside jails under electronic monitoring because of the pandemic. The country has registered some 150,000 infections and over 500 deaths. Israeli settlers have forced their way into Jerusalem's Flashpoint Al-Aqsa Mosque compound to celebrate a Jewish holiday. Palestinians have condemned the move, calling it provocative. Mona Kandil brings us more.
Israeli settlers have escalated their daily raids into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Jerusalem, Al-Quds, in the last couple of days during their celebrations of one of the Jewish holidays known as Passover. On Thursday alone, hundreds of Israeli settlers raided the holy site under the protection of Israeli forces, according to the Muslim religious authorities, or what's known as the Awqaf, which administrates the compound. Palestinian officials denounced what they described as provocative moves, saying that Israel has simultaneously banned Palestinian worshippers from entering the mosque.
The Israelis are accompanied and protected by soldiers and are allowed to raid the site and desecrate it. The Israeli forces closed the markets and the shops in the old town. A number of Palestinian youths were detained. It was another occupation of the Al-Aqsa complex and the old town, but this time by the settlers along with the soldiers.
Israeli settler groups have called on their supporters to converge on the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex in celebration of Passover, which began on March 27 and lasts until April 3. Thousands of Israeli soldiers were deployed across Jerusalem Al-Quds to provide protection to settlers who toured in groups the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and took photos of several places. Other strict measures have also been taken on Friday to prevent Muslims reach the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Experts believe the incursions are part of Israel's policy to Judaize the holy site and expel the Palestinians out from the holy city.
The Israeli regime is escalating the situation in Jerusalem Al-Quds. It's only mounting tensions. The Israeli prime minister is facing internal problems and he's looking for a way to survive. He knows settlers will help him to do so. That is why he won't stop their acts. Therefore, the settlers are provided with a good opportunity to desecrate the site and provoke the Palestinians during their holidays.
Since its occupation of the Palestinian lands, Israel has been launching violent crackdown on Palestinians in different ways, especially when it serves Tel Aviv's interests. During the Jewish holidays, Israeli settlers escalate their raids into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Palestinians say the raids are provocative and pursue the policy of suppression by Israeli regime against the Palestinian people living in the holy city of Al-Quds. Mona Qadil, occupied Ramallah.
And now to the UK, where the medical regulator there says seven people have died from rare blood clots after receiving the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. 30 people in total have suffered blood clots after receiving the jab. Over 18 million doses of the vaccine have been administered in the UK. The regulator stressed that there is currently no evidence to suggest a causal link between blood clots and the jab. It added that the benefits of the Swedish-British vaccine continue to outweigh any risks. The European Medicines Agency and the World Health Organization have also declared the AstraZeneca vaccine safe. However, some countries, such as Germany, have restricted the use of the vaccine to certain age groups. The company said last month that its vaccine is 79% effective in preventing COVID-19 and does not increase the risk of blood clots. Meanwhile, a number of European countries have reported more coronavirus infections and deaths as the continent is still grappling with the pandemic and its more contagious variants. Ukraine has reported over 20,000 new COVID-19 infections. This has been the highest one-day tally since the pandemic hit the country more than a year ago. The health ministry also confirmed nearly 400 deaths. The government has already imposed lockdowns in several large cities, including in the capital, Kiev, to contain the virus. Meanwhile, Germany registered more than 18,000 new cases and 120 deaths. The country's total infections stand at over 2.87 million. Its death toll is also nearing 77,000. Elsewhere, Russia reported over 9,000 new deaths, more than 2,000 of them in the capital, Moscow. Now, the country's death toll also rose to more than 100,000. And back to the UK, where Britons take to the streets in multiple cities to voice their protests against the bill that makes it easier for police to shut down peaceful rallies. Rallies have been staged in 25 cities, including in London, Liverpool, and Bristol. The event in London was held despite police warning against any rallies. Protests are part of the so-called Kill the Bill rallies, which call for the repeal of the police crime sentencing and courts bill. The legislation currently under review in the British Parliament allows police officers to take tougher measures against protesters. Opponents of the bill say it can be used to curtail individual freedom and violate people's right to protest. Well, nearly five decades after the Vietnam War ended, the toxins the U.S. used during the battles continue to claim victims. While grudgingly admitting to spraying chemical agents in Laos, Washington has so far refused to provide compensation to those affected during the war.
Shortly after taking office as South Vietnam's president in 1955, pro-American Ngo Dinh Diem began a crackdown on suspected members of the Viet Minh Communist Coalition of the North. The Cold War was in full swing, and the United States, which was concerned about a rise in communism, gradually ramped up its military presence in Vietnam. Washington finally found the excuse to justify a war in the region following an incident in the Gulf of Tonkin in 1963 when two U.S. destroyers were targeted by a torpedo attack by the North Vietnamese forces. The U.S. Congress then approved the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, which authorized U.S. military action in the region. The conflict that ensued has been regarded as one of the bloodiest wars the U.S. has ever been involved in. American troops resorted to using warfares, including napalm and chemical toxins, to confront their enemy. Perhaps the most notorious was a chemical substance called Agent Orange that was used during Operation Ranch Hand to defoliate jungles to uncover Vietnamese troops and destroy crops between 1961 and 1971. The substance contained dioxin, which is one of the most toxic chemicals known to man and has been linked to severe birth defects, cancers, and mental and physical disabilities.
You have to understand that America has a different standard for the rest of the world than it does at home. At home, America adheres to fairly high level standards when it comes to herbicides, for example, of which Agent Orange is one. But when it comes to the poor nations of the world, such as Laos or Cambodia, a completely different standard applies.
The U.S. failure in the war and its atrocities in terms of the number of civilian deaths and the use of chemical weapons has tarnished America's image at home and abroad to date.
Well, an estimated 3 million people have been killed in the Vietnam War, more than half of whom are said to have been civilians. The toxins the American troops sprayed on a vast expanse of land in Laos and Vietnam have been claiming victims even to this day. More than 4 million Vietnamese were exposed to Agent Orange, 1 million of whom are reported to suffer severe health conditions. Now, decades after the end of the war, children in the region are still born with severe deformities. It took the U.S. years to even acknowledge the use of such chemicals during the war.
The U.S. rained down some 600,000 gallons of herbicides on the neutral nation of Laos and roughly 19 million gallons of such chemicals in Vietnam. The chemicals were so potent that even American troops got a taste of their detrimental effects. After 14 years of legal dispute, the U.S. Congress passed the Orange Agent Act in 1991 to compensate American veterans of the Vietnam War who were exposed to the toxin. But it wasn't until the year 2000 that Washington started to admit responsibility for what the people of Vietnam and Laos have been going through. Washington kicked off a 10-year project to decontaminate swathes of Vietnamese land from the herbicide in 2019, but stopped short of awarding compensation to the families of the victims. There's also no mention of U.S. chemical attacks on neutral Laos during the war. Even after the American military acknowledged the attacks, a former American commander denied all knowledge about the use of dioxin there.
Laos was a country that was caught in the middle of the Indo-Chinese War. The U.S. Was absolutely indiscriminate in its use of Agent Orange and other weapons of war against the population. It never apologized. It never had any second thoughts. As far as the U.S. was concerned, it was just a collateral damage. So the U.S. has never made good on that. It's never made good on the enormous damage that was done to Cambodia, or certainly the incredible bloodshed that was imposed on Vietnam.
The Vietnam War ended long ago, but not for thousands of people living in Vietnam and Laos who are still being haunted by its effects.
And with that brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Wireless equipment now consumes annually 40% of all chip value produced in the world. The industry is now embedded in the global economy, and some countries are now benefiting from untold numbers of businesses around the world. We now present you an article written by Henry Kressel, a technologist, inventor, and long-term Warburg Pincus private equity investor, under the heading Communications, the Once and Future Next Big Thing. The article has been taken from the Asia Times Daily. Please stay with us for more of Henry Kressel's article. how to stimulate economic growth through technology investment is a continuing discussion. So a commonly asked question is, what is the next big technology thing that will create major new economic opportunities? I believe that the first place to look is investing in communications technology, because the historical record shows that breakthrough innovations in communications technology that substantially increase the ability of people to interact and conduct business are key drivers of economic growth. To support this conclusion, consider five major developments in electronic communications that had profoundly important consequences, starting with the electrical telegraph. The first electronic communication system was the telegraph link, developed by Samuel Morse and demonstrated in 1844. In addition to enabling rapid long-distance personal and business communications, the telegraph lines along railroad tracks revolutionized the ability to synchronize train traffic over big networks. As big railroad networks proved their economic value, their construction generated investment booms that lasted decades as railroads, in the second half of the 19th century, proliferated around the world. The second big communications breakthrough was the telephone, that was introduced in the 1870s. Telephony set the stage for numerous new businesses and services, but an important consequence was the consolidation of the industry. Because overlapping competing telephony networks were ruinous, to ensure national service, AT&T was established as a US monopoly. The company was responsible for decades of contributions through Bell Laboratory Research and its many service subsidiaries. Its monopoly position and consistent profits allowed the company to conduct long-range research, and the transistor was one of the results. I think of this momentous invention as the offspring of the telephony industry, since it was funded through the profits of that industry. The invention of the transistor at Bell Laboratories in 1948 opened the digital computation era and led to all subsequent communications innovations that relied on computer operation. But it took a team of innovators to go to the next stage of exploiting the transistor value in computation. A team of scientists, including former Bell Laboratories people, saw the market opportunity opened by digital circuits and founded Intel. The business plan was about one page long and defined no specifics. Intel created the integrated circuit market, and its microprocessor chips were increasingly valuable, in large part because of their use in growing digital communication networks of increasing data carrying capacity. Again, we see the impact of communications on business development. So a key enabler of Intel's growth was the fact that ever larger computer communication networks linking ever more powerful computers were being built, thus creating a demand for increasingly powerful Intel data processing chips. But the long-distance data-carrying capabilities of networks was being limited by the available technology that relied on copper or coaxial transmission lines. This brings us to our third communications technology breakthrough that eventually solved that problem. This data rate limitation was overcome in the 1970s by fiber optic communications technology, which used light transmission through thin glass lines with lasers providing the light pulses. It took years of development, but by the 1990s, multi-gigabit fiber optic systems were being deployed globally, enabling the internet, our fourth communications breakthrough. The internet had its roots in the idea of communication networks based on digital data packets, provided with headers for addressing and moving through computer routers that read their destination addresses and moved the packets to their destination through multiple hops. Fiber optic links combined with high-speed processing chips at routers enabled gigabit networks that had not been practical with prior copper-based transmission lines. So the modern internet was born, and we have witnessed thousands of new companies since the late 1990s that have leveraged its capability to provide new services that now dominate US economy, such as Amazon.com, Google and Facebook. The internet has left few industries alone. Witness Netflix, which using internet distribution successfully competes with cable access to the home, a business that was deemed as impregnable monopoly. For the next big development, we go to our fifth breakthrough. Ubiquitous two-way consumer wireless communications. Wireless communication was demonstrated in the late 19th century, but it took until the 1990s for two-way service at affordable consumer rates to become a mass service with billions of subscribers globally. As a measure of its importance, wireless equipment now consumes annually 40% of all the chip value produced in the world. The industry is now embedded in the global economy, and some countries are now benefiting untold numbers of businesses around the world. Of course, easy internet access had to be developed, so here wireless technology played a key role. Internet access needs local networks, and a world without Wi-Fi is unthinkable. It has transformed the way people shop and people communicate. What we have described is a historical process in which new communications technologies enabled world-changing economic development. But the process is always painful, with winners and losers galore. Identifying breakthrough communication technologies is the easy part. Exploiting market opportunities after revolutionary technologies emerge is where winners and losers part company. For example, wireless telephones became highly popular after the 1990s, but the industry leaders of the time, Nokia and Motorola, focused on cost reduction of handsets and missed the market. Both went out of the handset business. One lesson from history is that breakthrough technologies may emerge slowly in the face of skepticism that stops companies from taking them seriously until it is too late. Extensive and costly private and government investment is needed over years. For example, for fiber optic communications industry conferences in the late 1970s included discussions dismissing their use in undersea cables because of inadequate reliability. Corning persevered in the fiber market, becoming the world leader. Let me note that sometimes going against accepted wisdom can be rewarding. My favorite example involves an investment we made at Warburg Pincus in a company called Level One Communications in the late 1980s. Its proprietary technology allowed transmitting megabit rate digital data on ordinary twisted pair telephone copper lines. There was common belief that computer data would be transmitted over fiber optic links in office environments. On the other hand, we believed that if megabits of data per second could be transmitted for short distances over phone lines, the lower cost and ease of installation of copper lines would ensure a large market for local office digital data distribution. This turned out to be correct, in fact, as Ethernet became a standard at 10 megabits per second over copper lines. And being early, Level 1 captured a large share of the market for chips enabling the service. But where are we today in breakthrough communications technology? Is there a number 6? It is still early to say, but the new 5th generation wireless technology rolling out across the world is likely to fit the category, because it ushers in the age of widespread wireless machine networks. The reason is that 5th generation greatly improves the data carrying capacity of wireless networks and is well suited for machine-to-machine wireless communications, enabling remote high-speed data interconnections previously impractical. For example, this will enable robotic operations remotely controlled through wireless connectivity and machine maintenance service remotely. One much-discussed application that could revolutionize transportation is driverless vehicles. Other applications in manufacturing and remote sensing, as well as remote medical system monitoring, will greatly reduce business costs. But that will be true only for companies prepared to invest and use this new technology. And government support for communications infrastructure is critical because it is a vital economic asset for growth. But this has always been the case. Companies either invest in the future or they disappear.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, we send our peace and blessings upon all the prophets of Allah, Subhanahu wa Taala. And especially the last of them, Muhammad al-Mustafa and his progeny, and those companions who followed their path. I'm your host, Sayyid Wahid Alawi, and welcome to another program of For a Better Life, here on IRIB English Radio. We're talking about psychological diseases, dear brothers and sisters, that we might have within ourselves or in our society. And we mentioned the power of faith and how faith and reliance upon Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala can help us and rescue us from a troublesome life. If you live in the ghettos of US, Canada, European countries, Africa, that reliance of faith in God can rescue you from those slums and ghettos. And this likewise goes for the one who is wealthy and rich and lives in the best suburbs possible of those cities. How many times have we not seen people from the ghettos elevating themselves and reaching high levels of confidence and spirituality and being leaders of a community and of a nation? Do recall our dear brother Shaheed Malcolm X Rahmatullah Alayh, who was from those ghettos and who prevailed against all odds and finally drank from the glass of martyrdom. Do recall his grandson, Elijah Shabazz, who also became martyred and was among one of those Afro-Americans who had a troublesome life. May Allah's mercy be upon all of them. Do recall all of those, and also do recall those who were wealthy, but that wealth did not help them, did not rescue them from taking suicide, from taking their own life. Why? Because they had the lack of faith in God. Thus, the noble and glorious Quran says, in God's remembrance and reliance are at rest the hearts of those who have faith and do righteous deeds. Chapter 13, verse 28. In another verse, it says, it is He who sent down tranquility into the hearts of the faithful. Chapter 48, verse 4. The noble Quran considers steadiness and security to be the characteristics of those whose hearts are full of faith.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Mental peace, dear brothers and sisters, it's a very, very profound thing. Let me give you an example to make it tangible. Imagine that you are in a battlefield and missiles and bullets are coming towards you. But even in that situation, dear brothers and sisters, you feel inner peace and no fear can penetrate you. Didn't we have those kinds of people in the 8-year war in Iran? People who put their lives in the palms of their hands and went towards the battlefield with tranquility. And they even prayed in those ditches that were as a shield against those bullets and missiles. They prayed there, and God knows about their tranquility. Now, in a lower level, imagine that you are in a traffic jam. You have noise and sound pollution and air pollution. People screaming and shouting in the honks of the cars. Now, can you exercise there to reach a certain serenity? Don't get irritated. If you can exercise in these situations, they're not battlefields, but they can be your battlefield. That would be your jihad. If you can take those golden opportunities or circumstances in the society that you face on a daily basis, people shouting at you, someone being rude towards you, someone breaking the line in front of you, and so on and so forth. If you can take those opportunities and exercise and try to control your emotions and not reach anger. Have anger management. Have serenity. You will see that sooner or later you will reach higher levels of well-being, of tranquility, of mental peace. The Noble Quran says mental peace and security are qualities of those who have faith and who have not drawn a veil of wrongdoing over their faith. Chapter 6, verse 82. Another verse says, lo, fear and sorrow do not affect the friends of God. Awliya Allah. Chapter 10, verse 62. And what a beautiful statement from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which I will repeat and end this program with. Lo, fear and sorrow do not affect the friends of God. Chapter 10, verse 62. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala elevate all of us, and may we sooner or later reach the ranks of the friends of God, awliya Allah. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Is all I need.
All I need.
Love is all I need.
It's all I need.
Love is all I need.
All I need.
Love is all I need.
Oh,
your love is all I need. To be
all I need.
And I know that you see how much you need. You mean to me, 'cause your love is all I need. To be all I can be. I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Guardian published an article about Trump's new official website with the headline, Donald Trump uses new website to rewrite history of his presidency. The Guardian calls out the language Trump's site uses, describing his actions and accomplishments that are listed as being hyperbolic. Beyond omitting a number of his failures and follies, the Trump site also attempts to deflect blame as well. Dear listeners, we have prepared an article for you in this regard written by Chris Walker Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Trump's new official website attempts to rewrite history and gain online clout. Stay tuned for more. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has launched a new website that promotes himself heavily as a magnificent leader, failing to contextualize that ambitious claim. With the numerous scandals, two impeachments, and hundreds of thousands of deaths from coronavirus that occurred under his tenure, Trump's site masks the difficulties he had in office while describing his supposed successes in positive ways. But many observers have noted that the site, viewable at 45office.com, appears to be also a vainglorious attempt at rewriting the history of the past 4 years. The office of Donald J. Trump is committed to preserving the magnificent legacy of the Trump administration while at the same time advancing the America First agenda. The site's main landing page states, hinting that the former Republican will seek to continue influencing the U.S. political scene for some time to come. News media across the web have panned the site as being one-sided and misleading. The Guardian published an article about the website with the headline, "Donald Trump uses new website to rewrite history of his presidency." The Guardian calls out the language Trump's site uses, describing his actions and accomplishments that are listed as being hyperbolic. Beyond omitting a number of his failures and follies, the Trump site also attempts to deflect blame as well. For example, while discussing his leadership during the coronavirus pandemic, the site makes it seem as though all responsibility for U.S. deaths rests solely with China. When the coronavirus plague arrived from China, afflicting every nation around the globe, President Trump acted early and decisively. This site claims, disregarding the fact that Trump spent weeks falsely claiming the virus would go away on its own, and subsequently downplayed the seriousness of COVID-19 throughout the remainder of 2020. More than 400,000 Americans died from the virus while Trump was in office. Numerous studies and former health officials that served within his office have contended that his inaction on the pandemic likely led to hundreds of thousands of unnecessary deaths. The About section for the site, at just under 900 words, reads like a love letter of sorts for the former president, again highlighting his supposed accomplishments while neglecting to mention his failures or wrongly deflecting blame to others. President Trump never wavered in defense of our values, our families, our traditions, and our freedom, the website claims. However, Trump's actions and statements as president often did run counter to many Americans' families and values. He regularly engaged in racist rhetoric, including telling four congresswomen of color to go back to their own countries before criticizing his governing style. Meanwhile, he sowed division and hatred of undocumented immigrants and other marginalized groups. Trump's actions in his final month in office, too, were largely antithetical to the oft-observed peaceful transfer of power between administrations, as he engaged in pressure campaigns toward state officials throughout the U.S. to defy the will of voters after losing to now-President Joe Biden in last year's presidential race. He also sought to disrupt the certification process of Electoral College by encouraging his own vice president, Mike Pence, to reject the results, despite Pence not having the actual constitutional power to do so. Trump's new website, besides being a considered attempt to spin his record, appears to also be an attempt to reestablish his online presence. The site is part of Trump's efforts to reconstruct his digital presence after essentially being deplatformed after January Capitol insurrection, Axios Sarah Fisher noted. Trump has been banned from all of the major social media websites, including Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, following his inciting statements on those platforms after a mob of his loyalists attacked the U.S. Capitol in January. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM. 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio. Herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day. on IRIB English Radio. In continuing in mentioning the traits and the characteristics or what the Imam terms as junood for the aql, for the intellect, and for jahal or for the ignorance, we have reached the third grouping. Here the Imam mentions that one of those units that are for intellect is tasdeeq, which can be translated as affirmation of a belief, the attestation to a belief, the confirming of a particular belief. And its rival, as the Imam says, wazidduhu, you know, that thing that is in direct conflict with it, is what is known as juhud, denial. But now it needs to be understood, what do we mean by tasdeeq and what do we mean by juhud? Tasdeeq is that a person has a particular belief in something and he acts upon it. It is not something that is just, you know, zahir or apparent. No, he has a particular belief. And not only does he have that belief, but he affirms it by what? By acting upon it. It is not either he has a belief and not acting upon it, or he just acts upon it without having a belief. That is hypocrisy, the second one. But the first one also, you have many Muslims say, I believe in the Day of Judgment, I believe. But you have not done tasdeeq. Why? You do not pray your salah, you do not fast properly, you do not give your homes, you do not do your zakat and all the other acts of worship that is incumbent upon you. This is not tasdeeq of your belief. Similarly, on the other side, we have what is known as disbelief or kufr. Now, juhud is that instant when a person has a knowledge of a particular thing being the truth, but yet he himself denies it. He denies it not because of evidence, he denies it because of certain reasons that he feels that it is not incumbent on him to follow it. Most of them being personal. What I mean by personally is that, okay, I just don't want to do it. You know, I just can't see myself doing it. Or because of, you know, arrogance. That because of this type of arrogance, I do not need to follow anybody. Yes, I know this is the truth, but I just don't want to do it. That type of attitude. So this is the two things. One is the affirmation of one's belief by action. And the other one is denying something that you know to be the truth. So this is the two opposites. And again, as you can see clearly, there are different types of levels and stages by which this can occur in terms of tasdeeq and in terms of juhud. Inshallah, in continuing with the next of our characteristics that have been mentioned. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Oh Lord, here I am pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
The debate.